Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams, our co-host. Daniel, good to see you.
How are you this morning, Dr. Paul?
I am doing well, and I want to follow up with a program we had last week on NDAA, because it's moving along. NDAA looks like it passed the House and the Senate, but, you know, it went through the House faster than I expected, or not surprised, though, because they didn't do all the amendment. They put them all together, and they shovel them through because they want to save the controversies, the place where they really disagree, you know, for the House, for the joint conference. Of course, then the Democrats and the Republicans in the House and the Senate have to come together. But anyway, we want to talk about it today because Republican leadership in the House, they were not very happy with the bill. Because it didn't put enough restraints on the president on going to war. You know, it had to do with how you go to war and how we're going to fight terrorism and all these activities. So they were very, very strongly opposed to the bill the way it's written, and they're going to continue to work on this because what they really disapproved of was getting rid of the authority to use military force. And he said, well, I'm not against that, but I want to change it. And, of course, they do admit, you know, the authority to use military force in 2001. It's sort of been abused. And even the one in two, the whole principle is wrong, really. So it's been on and on. So that will proceed. But it's interesting about some of the arguments from the Republicans on why they can't tolerate anything that would put any restraints on the president.
Yeah, and this is, you know, on the House side of the bill, there were several amendments that were very important. One of them, of course, was to tell the president you can't go to war with Iran before you get authorization. But the ones we're talking about mostly today are the repeal of the 2001 authorization for force against those who attacked on 9/11 and the 2002 authorization for Iraq. And the ranking member of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, Mike McCall from Texas, was on Fox News over the weekend complaining bitterly about repealing those. And he said, I'm all for arguing about updating the 2001 AUMF after 9/11, but this would illegalize all global counterterrorism efforts operations in the world that we're conducting. Interesting way of putting it.
Yeah, you know, and the word's probably been around, but not too many people have heard it. Illegalize previous wars, and then we would be liable for what we were doing because they weren't legal. It sounds to me like he said, you're admitting that you did something wrong. Well, that's what we need. We need some people, you know, admitting that our policies are so bad. But his big thing is terrorism. There's terrorism out there, and you have to continue to do this. And besides, our policy, the policy of the United States, are perfectly okay, and therefore somebody has to calm these terrorists down. And this, of course, is an illusion that we have nothing to say about what's going on. And when you think about it, you know, we're not bystanders who are just going in to settle and help the good guys. I mean, we're involved in replacing governments, regime change. We put on sanctions. We put on bombing raids. We're in 150 countries. And to argue the case that the opposition, the people who are opposed to us and who have joined what they qualify or claim are terrorist groups, it's that old argument I've been into for a long time, and that is, does our deeply flawed foreign policy have anything to do with incentivizing these people to not like us and, you know, and strike back? And just think of right now going back and forth between what's happening in Iran. I think in a way Iran's probably been rather restrained, you know, if you want to argue about it. And yet, of course, I think our antagonism and the support we get from our allies, it's pretty antagonistic. I think the people who are opposed to this authority are only saying, you can't just do this anytime you want. You're supposed to come to Congress. And that's what's making some of the Republicans nearly hysterical.
Yeah, and it is a flashback because the whole idea of the war on terror, let's not forget the Iraq authorization. I would encourage people to read it. I reread it this morning, and I was amazed that anyone would object to it being suspended or overturned because it's a pack of lies. I mean, from top to bottom, every assertion in the whereas clauses is a lie. It talks about Al-Qaeda being involved with Saddam Hussein, which we know is a lie. And in fact, we knew it before, even before Bush went in early 03. And as I was looking back, there was a January 2003 CIA report to Congress called Iraq Support for Terrorism. The CIA and the intelligence community concluded that the relationship between Iraq and Al-Qaeda appears to more closely resemble that of two independent actors trying to exploit each other. And that is an amazing word because it's suggesting this. They're exploiting each other. They're competing with each other in Iraq. And so what does the U.S. do? They go in and take one side out. So here comes Al-Qaeda blossoming and boom. We created the Al-Qaeda problem in Iraq.
And the way it's described by some of the Republicans is you're handcuffing the president. And I got to thinking, well, aren't we supposed to do that? The president is not a dictator. He's not supposed to be able to go to war without these, consent of the Congress. And he has done that in the past. But the wars that we've gotten into have not gotten the permission, and that's a big problem. But to call this handcuffing, what I would consider handcuffing the president is modifying the interpretation of the Constitution that says if there is an apparent imminent attack on us, the president actually can defend the country. Yeah. So that's a handcuff on a legitimate power we have. But that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about, $7 trillion, thousands, hundreds of thousands of people dying, wounded, all this money being spent, undermining of our liberties. I'm always reminded about a flawed foreign policy when I go to the airport. I think about, are our freedoms being undermined? Yes, we are. We have to be protected against ourselves. So every American is a suspect, especially if you want to get on an airplane with a little kid.
Yeah.
Or pushing somebody in a wheelchair. Yeah. You are a suspect, and we have to prove to the world that we are really going to protect you against yourself. And that is a big problem.
And, McFaul saying that we can't get out of Iraq because Al-Qaeda and ISIS are still a threat. Well, they were a threat, as we said earlier, because of the U.S. involvement. But it's kind of interesting. McFaul is a nice guy, and he's not a bad guy. He just endorses bad policies. But when it comes to Syria, where are all of these people concerned about Al-Qaeda and ISIS when we were arming Al-Qaeda and ISIS in Syria? And everybody knew it. I was just looking at a Fox News headline from just a few years ago. Fox News saying we saw the weapons going to Al-Qaeda from the U.S. So where was the concern there? It's just never wanting to get out of these wars.
Well, don't you think there's a little bit of a contradiction on the president's position when he was saying that we won the war against terrorism and we need to get out of Syria and we need to get out of Afghanistan, which, of course, we would agree with. But I think that's a contradiction to what's going on. And even with the president, he's not interested in worrying about cutting back. That's the one thing characteristic so far on this. There was probably practically zero interest in maybe modifying the budget, mainly because there is not a bit of interest, except for a few of our libertarian friends, to changing the foreign policy.
Yeah.
But if we assume the role of making everybody safe from terrorism, and we define terrorism of anybody who disagrees with what we're doing, we have a job on our hands. And, of course, if you throw military Keynesian in on this, too, and that is that there's profits to be made. And I guess there are some that would assume that, it is. They probably really believe that military Keynesian actually boosts the economy, which I don't believe because, you have to take the money from someplace else. But some people would believe that and probably say, yeah, we ought to keep this going and build these weapons and the planes, but we don't ever want to use them, and they're not out deliberately trying to start a war, but their policies are provoking war, antagonism, and setting a stage. At least up until now, there's tremendous motivation to not cut back on the spending. And we've mentioned other times, too, that the spending is much bigger than this budget. There's a lot of activities justified for us to maintain our empire.
And, you know, Representative Schiff from California was making a big deal about how responsible they are putting in a budget that's only $13 billion more than last year. But, you know, I think the big clue that this whole thing is kind of a whack-a-mole is if you remember our new national security strategy that came out earlier in the year, all of a sudden there was no mention of the global war on terror at all. It's just basically erased from the history books, and now we have to worry about China and Russia. It really is like 1984 in Orwell. You know, we've always been at war with East Asia. So
yeah, and if it was truly calming down, somebody would make sure there would be a monster out there to destroy. And we were warned we shouldn't be doing that. We shouldn't be looking for enemies like this. So the power and the control on the policy and the spending comes outside the American people. We cited some polling the other day about why the American people are much closer to what we're talking about. And they don't support these wars. Yet at the same time, the deep state is very much involved. There's profits to be made. They're involved with the media. And empire is very appealing. And because they have control of the news, they can make people feel guilty that if you're not super patriotic, and if you're not for all these wars and running the world, you're not a good patriot, and you're not supporting the troops, and you're not a good American. So that to me is the real challenge for us. But I do think when people hear the message of less government, non-intervention, a policy of peace, I don't think they can stand up and with a straight face say, oh no, you're completely wrong, we need more wars. But their policies seem to always say that, if not, we don't want wars as much as we got to be ready. And if we're not ready, we have to find an enemy, because we got to keep the military operation running. And that is a constant thing. But that's been around for a long time. More so, I would say, we've assumed that role since World War II more than, and each year it seems to be worse. This century has been especially bad, and it's growing, but it's also moving us more rapidly to the bankruptcy too.
And of course, we have to be equal time criticizers, because of course the Republicans are ridiculous for saying we can never get rid of this authorization. We need it. There's going to be terrorism. But let's not forget that the Democrats here are really being very hypocritical. And here's we had a piece by Kurt Nimmo on the Ron Paul Institute website that made a very good point. The piece was called Two-Faced Democrats Move to Prevent Trump's Iran War. And he puts in a tweet from the Progressive Caucus. At the urging of our progressive members, Congress voted overwhelmingly this morning to block President Trump from going to a war with Iran without congressional input. This is a hugely important vote. Okay, that's fine, but as Kurt points out, where were you guys when President Obama was doing that and more, where he was droning American citizens, where he was looking at his kill list, where he started numerous wars? He started the Syria nonsense. He started the disastrous Libya war, et cetera, et cetera. So there is quite a bit of hypocrisy. This is more about politics than about real policy.
It's amazing how well they can blend two things together. Total agreement on running the empire and spending the money, and total disagreement and hatred almost between the two-party systems. And how much is grandstanding? Who knows? Because the winners are always the people who want to spend the money. You know, there was one statement made by McCall that I thought was just not on target. He said that passing this and restraining the president is dangerous and reckless. And I got to thinking, well, what is dangerous and reckless about restraining the president from doing things he shouldn't be doing? And it's the overkill from the executive branch, whether it's domestic controls and the war on terrorism, this whole atmosphere. That's what's dangerous and reckless. I do fear government, but tell you the truth, and this is probably considered very unpatriotic, I fear our own government more than I would fear, or more than I feared Saddam Hussein.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't believe all that stuff. You know, he was coming over here and he was liable to bomb us and all these things. So the fear, and I think that's where the concentration ought to be, you know, here at home, to protecting our freedoms. This whole idea that they can generate all this agitation and money spending and militarism, oh, we're always doing it for your good. And that's their argument.
Yeah, it's this dangerous, dangerous thing. Does anyone really think that if there was a credible threat to the United States from terrorists, a real credible, not a made-up one, not mobile weapons labs and all this garbage, does anyone think if there was a real terrorist threat that everyone would sit idly by, well, we repealed that 9/11 AUMF, we can't really do anything. It's just ridiculous. What they want to do is retain this bogus war authorization so they can go to war anywhere and everywhere. And that's what we are against. And again, that's why we're going to Washington on August 24th to have our conference. We're going to try to detox Washington's addiction to war. So join us. You can go to ronpaulinstitute.org/conference and get your tickets. Dr. Ron Paul, myself, members of the Institute, and a lot of great speakers. It's going to be a great day to make a stand, not for realism, not for intervention light, not for neoconservatism, for non-interventionism. It's a broad coalition. It's beyond left and right. It's all of us together. We have to make a stand for it, and these are critical times, so we hope you'll be there too. Dr. Paul?
Very good. And it's hard to predict exactly when this will all be settled and the NDAA gets passed, because it will get passed. But they may agitate for a while. It may take a little longer than usual. But summer break's coming up, and they usually move things along. They're putting things right at the end of the year, end of the fiscal year or the calendar year, or ready for a big summer vacation. They amazingly move things along pretty well. The bipartisan vitriol seems to be calmed down under those circumstances. So it may get moved along, but there's going to be a lot of debate going on here, because it's something that the Democrats can use, and picking it and picking a position which sounds reasonable, even though Daniel points out, well, that they had no concern when the Democrats were doing the very same thing. This is why I am convinced that you have to have a precise philosophy of what you're believing in, and that is whether it's monetary policy, fiscal policy, or whether it's foreign policy, instead of just saying interventionism. Interventionism is appealing because it sounds like you're not overly rigid, and you're not overly rigid a socialist, or overly religious, overly dependent on laissez-faire capitalism. But interventionism, you pick and choose and these sorts of things. But interventionism is a real dangerous tool, because you can do anything you want. All you have to do is propagandize. And it's always, they do it in the couch of helping people. And they also do it with the announcement, this is what true democracy is all about. Well, I don't happen to believe very strongly in true democracy, having the majority dictate to the minority. You'd think there would be a lot of people in the minority ranks that would say, why are we dictating majorities? That's what we've been suffering from. Of course, what they think they're going to do is become the majority and then dictate. But no, we have to concentrate on what individuals deserve, and that is their liberty, and then go from there and have non-intervention economics, non-intervention foreign policy, and non-intervention in our social lives. I think under those circumstances, there'd be a good chance that we could make the world a lot more peaceful and a lot more safe. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.